I became a choreographer out of desperation. And the thing that drove me to this is precisely the measure problem that Rainer talked about. Let me start with a very brief statement of a measure problem that just emphasizing the points that Lenny didn't mention. That basically these cutoffs that we introduce, usually what we do is something along the following lines. We start with some hypersurface, say sigma zero, in space-time. Then we have a congruence of geodesics that emanate from this hypersurface. And we follow these geodesics for a certain amount of time until we reach another hypersurface sigma. And we say this is our cutoff surface. So we count everything below the surface sigma. And as I said, we follow this for a certain period of time, where what is time? We can choose different things. We can choose proper time. We can choose scale factor. There is lots of different things we could choose. And then we just count. We count different observations and find their relative probabilities. And we say that, say, the ratio of probabilities is a limit as t goes to infinity of the numbers of occurrences of the corresponding events. And the good news is that this limit exists. And moreover, it is independent of how we choose the initial hypersurface. We can choose as to lie in different vacua. It doesn't have to be a Cauchy surface of space-time, because any finite surface will eventually give you an infinite kind of multiverse. The limit exists independent of the choice of the sigma zero. This is kind of the attractor property of the eternal inflation. However, it does depend on what you choose as your time variable. And that's the big problem. And it depends on it precisely because of the fact that Lenny mentioned, is that everything is concentrated near the cutoff, and therefore it depends on how exactly we draw this cutoff surface. Okay. So there are all these different measures, and we don't know which one to choose. And we studied the phenomenological properties of these different measures, and we know that some of them are bad, some of them appear to be fine. But what we need is some fundamental theory that will tell us what is the right measure. So in this spirit, I'm going to discuss the particular proposal that was made by Jaume Garriga and me, and then related work was done by, I also don't remember the name of many people, but I wrote them down just now. So, Busso, Rewogel, these guys I know, but then there is Riechenhauer and Rosenhaus. Okay. The idea is that the cutoff in the bulk spacetime is related to an ultraviolet cutoff in a three-dimensional theory that lives on the future boundary of spacetime. So let me try to outline how this could work. First of all, we'll need a little more detailed picture of multiverse. So this is future boundary. There are bubbles that nucleate like this. And there are bubbles within bubbles. Now, some of these bubbles are going to be Minkowski bubbles. Some of them are going to be ADS bubbles and will end at singularities. And some of them will be de Sitter bubbles, and those inflation will continue, and there will be sites of nucleation of further bubbles. So Minkowski bubbles and these hats and ADS bubbles are terminal bubbles, and there are DS bubbles in addition. So the proposal that, Garriga. So the proposal is that the boundary theory in which this ultraviolet cutoff is introduced lives on the de Sitter part of the future boundary. So the future boundary of this multiverse, if you look at this thing from the top, so you see bubbles on the future boundary, right? And some of them will be ADS bubbles, so these are singularities. Some of them will be Minkowski bubbles. What remains is what we call the eternal set. And let's call it script E, or scree. And this script E is just the set of the endpoints of eternal geodesics, which do not encounter any terminal bubbles. In the limit, this is a fractal set. When you introduce a cutoff, this cutoff removes all bubbles smaller than xi, the cutoff on scale xi. And it removes all waves, the gravitational waves or any other waves with wavelength less than xi. And it smears the boundaries of the bubbles by distance xi. And so with a cutoff, this boundary will be a three-dimensional manifold. It doesn't have gravity, but what theory it is, I have no idea. What exactly the theory is. But what I want to do is, without knowing the precise theory, as we do in the case of, say, ADS-CFT, what can we say, or can we say anything about the measure that results from this kind of approach? In order to introduce a cutoff, we need a metric on the boundary. We'll assume that in the inflating part of space-time, we can do the conformal treatment of infinity, that it adopts conformal treatment. So we write g mu nu of eta and x. Where eta 0 is, should write it the other way around. So this eternal set over there, this is eta equal to 0. This omega goes to infinity as eta goes to 0. And if you factor out this infinite factor, what remains is a metric g tilde on a compact space. Okay, and then we say that this metric g mu nu at 0 on this final surface, let's call it g bar, I'll take ij of x, right? And that gives me metric on the future infinity. This metric obviously is defined up to finite conformal rescaling, or finite wild transformations. Because we factor out the infinite factor in conformal treatment and in this conformal representation. But we can do any finite transformations on the metric, and we have to deal with this uncertainty.
The boundary are light-like and singular?
As I said, we are assuming that the theory lives on the part of the boundary that is this scree. Then Of course, we have to, at some point, to address the question, what do you do with terminal bubbles? Let's say if you take the hats, they would adopt your prescription that they are described by boundary theories, 2D theories that live on the boundaries of the hats. And the same, we assume, about the ADS bubbles, but we don't have anything new to say about how this is treated. All right. Now this this conjectured duality, we can represent it as follows. So we take the path integral in the bulk. Where phi stands for all the bulk fields, which approaches some specified values at infinity. And this is basically what it is the asymptotic wave function of the multiverse. And we say that this is related to the effective action of that theory that lives on screen over there. This, of course, is just the same thing as is done in ADS-CFT and in DS-CFT.
The Euclidean solution is non-compact and that point gravity decouples, whereas in the DS case, the Euclidean space is compact. And for many of the ideas, if one finds gravity, it didn't decouple. That's
what.
So I'm still wondering about that.
So you're saying that there should be gravity in this?
I'm saying at least it's a question. It's not obvious. It's not a matter of just.
I'm very flexible about this theory that lives on the future boundary because I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
So if you tell me it should include gravity, then it should be a 3D gravity.
Does phi bar include GIJ?
This phi bar includes J.
So that then we all agree, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, but it's a...
No, but this GIJ, these phi bars, I mean, in here, I'm thinking of these phi bars as couplings in the boundary theory, not as dynamical variables, but...
It's clear there's an infinite number of hidden questions in all of your...
Yeah, but, you know, as I said, I'm here addressing a very limited aspect of this thing. Assuming that something like this is happening, then what can we say about the magic? Right, this is the aspect that interests me. And then, now this is the asymptotic wave function, and now what I want to do, I want to introduce a cutoff, and what I want to say is that if cutoff is introduced, then this is replaced by okay, so we introduce a cutoff xi, so we have an effective action of the cutoff theory. And then it corresponds to the some cutoff, infrared cutoff on surface sigma in the bulk, somewhere here. And here we have xi. And there should be some relation between xi and sigma. Right, so the question is, what kind of surfaces sigma are you going to get from here? And the hope is that as xi goes to zero, this sigma will approach the future boundary. All right, so to see what can be expected, let us try to see how this works in the case of De Sitter space. So let me write the De Sitter metric as a squared of eta minus d eta squared. And I want to add some gravitons here. Right? So hij are small perturbations. A of eta in De Sitter space is this. Theta is negative, actually, and it reaches zero at the. So the future infinity, the screen now is simply I plus, and this is eta equal to zero. Eta is negative below it. And these hij are assumed to be much smaller than one. Okay. And then we want to look at this kind of relation here. The left-hand side can be calculated using the standard method. The left-hand side is just the wave function of the universe. We have the Sitter space with gravitons, and this has been done by many people, so I can just write the answer. Okay. I think I'll need a little space for this thing. So let me write the answer. So psi, let me write it as in this form, e to the iw. And the w, the wave function depends on the scale factor a and also on these hij of x bar, right? So hij is on the boundary. I'm writing it in the units where phi is equal to 1. Okay, so ha cubed, let's say over h bar squared, and plus phi over h squared. Okay, and this little h bar is the transverse traceless mode of the metric. So this is up to quadratic terms in these gravitons. Okay, so and this form is consistent with having a conformal field theory on the boundary. Because there, what we would get for the effective action is for three-dimensional theory, we'll have the following form, V3 with a cutoff xi minus 3 plus B1 minus 1 R, where R is curvature, scalar curvature, B0, h-bar, so these are the divergent terms that you can subtract, if you wish, with counter terms. B3, B1, B0 are the numerical coefficients. And this form is a quadratic approximation to some presumably Weyl-invariant and general covariant expression, because in 3D we don't have conformal anomalies, so the effective action should be actually conformally invariant. We don't know exactly what its form is, but various people obtained this particular form in the quadratic approximation. So now we want to compare these two things and maybe see what we can say about what xi is and what... Okay, so these coefficients bi, generally, if there are no major cancellations, should be proportional to the number of fields in the boundary theory. Okay, and then by comparing these two things, you can tell immediately that this number of fields should be of the order 1 over h squared. Well, it means the central charge, yeah. and then you can tell what xi is, again, by comparing these things. And xi then has to be of the order 1 over HA. Which is, if you look at this, which is eta. So this, for the center, Strominger, when he first discussed DS-CFT correspondence, found the central charge of the corresponding boundary theory, and it's also given by 1 over h squared by different considerations. Okay, so we have what this cutoff, how cutoff xi is related to the scale factor A. And this actually has a very simple meaning. Let me rewrite it as A of eta times xi is the order 1 over h. So this is the commoving scale corresponding to the cutoff distance xi. And what it says is that commoving scale is the horizon. So you can picture it as follows. This is your future boundary. You have this cutoff scale xi there. Then you drop light cones from there. And your cutoff surface is where these light cones meet. So this is your cutoff surface sigma. This is the horizon on the cutoff surface, right? So your as you decrease xi, right, you go to smaller xi, your cutoff is moved to the later cutoff surface. Now this central charge of the number of fields of the boundary theory is rather suggestive, because if you look at this cutoff surface sigma and you break it up into these horizon size regions, so this is on the surface sigma, these are horizon size regions. So it tells you that the number of field degrees of freedom of the boundary theory is 1 over h squared. And this is, so this NB, 1 over h squared. And this is Gibbons-Hawking entropy. So basically, what it tells you is that the boundary theory with a cutoff xi has this many field degrees of freedom and one horizon volume, right? And this is precisely how many field degrees of freedom horizon volume has in the holographic picture, right? Because we know that if holographic principle is correct, then the number of degrees of freedom in a volume bounded by area A is n less than A over 4. So this saturates this bound. And we know that for larger surfaces, if you take two surfaces beyond the apparent horizon, this is not true, actually. So it only works for surfaces of the size of apparent horizon where this bound is saturated. Okay, so the picture then that we arrive at is the following. Maybe I can erase this. Let's say we take this picture that the universe nucleates out of nothing, having size H inverse, and then it inflates. Right, so this is our De Sitter space. Then this future boundary is just, you can think of it as a unit sphere. This is your I plus. And if you take this cut of xi of the size of the entire thing, then you just have your cutoff surface will be here. And you just have 1 over h squared degrees of freedom. You have just one horizon volume. Then as your surface, as your cutoff xi is decreased, you go to later cutoffs, and this includes many horizon regions. And you kind of integrate in the degrees of freedom. So this is the statement that has often been made, that the normalization group flow corresponds to time evolution here. And the number of degrees of freedom actually changes as xi is decreased. OK. Now I would like to discuss what we do about Weyl invariants. As I said, the boundary metric is defined only up to finite Weyl transformations. And so which conformal gauge do we choose on the future boundary? That, and will it give us different measures? First, let us look again at the Sitter space. So Weyl rescalings. In the thing that I raised, when I wrote the Sitter metric, basically what I did, to get the boundary measure, I just dropped the scale factor. And that means that my boundary metric was simply flat metric. But now I can do a finite Weyl rescaling, and that would give me a metric like this with arbitrary function f. Now, what I want to do is to choose this function f so that it slowly varies on the scale of the cutoff xi, but otherwise it is arbitrary. Then, if I do that, what I can do is to substitute this metric here and see what happens now with my cutoff surface. So square root of g, for example, becomes f cubed. Right, so I'll have a f cubed here. So basically what happens is that xi gets replaced by xi over f. And now these two expressions will match if instead of a cutoff surface at eta equal to constant, I use a cutoff surface at eta equal to xi over f of x. So the moral is that if I choose different conformal gauges on the future boundary, what this corresponds to, it is the same De Sitter space, but now it is foliated by different surfaces. So it just corresponds to choosing different sigma zero and then following the geodesics with the same kind of rule. And of course, in the Sitter space or in any other space in the multiverse, we are free to choose different surfaces. So this is a good thing that we have this freedom. It just describes more freedom than what? I don't think so, because I define my metric on the future boundary using this prescription for conformal kind of approach to treatment of infinity. I have a conformal factor. If I can make my space-time manifold compact by factoring out omega, then I have some metric here.
You think any metric can be written that way?
No, no, no. No, not any magic can do it like this.
So okay, just ignore that.
I said the theta magic. In the case of the theta, right, I can make the magic, just by dropping the scale factor, I can make the future boundary magic flat.
So you're taking, first of all, flat spatial slices of the theta?
No, well, flat, I mean the sphere is flat.
So you're taking the global...
You can take, well, for what I'm going to talk about, it doesn't matter, because for measure problem kind of can be applied to a small part of it. But suppose we take global, right? Then the magic of future boundary of the theta is a sphere, right? So you have a magic on a sphere.
Let's see, the only important thing is that the metric doesn't vary much over horizon sizes. You don't really need it to be a sphere or a flat, you just need it to
exactly.
be smooth.
Exactly.
So you could write any metric, GIJ, as long as it's smooth.
No, Eva, what I did here, I was talking about specifically the theta. In the case of the theta space, you can choose the future boundary metric to be flat. And then the remaining freedom is the freedom of Wilder scaling, so the most general metric you can have in that case is this. But of course, in the most general case, the future boundary metric is not going to be flat, but you still will have the freedom of rescalings like this. Except instead of this, you'll have whatever metric you had before.
Right.
All right. Anyway, so how much time do I have? Anybody explain?
About 15 minutes. Okay. Five more questions.
So this is all the theta. Now, what can we say beyond the theta? There is something. I think much of what I said here will apply to the case of eternal inflation, where h is a slowly varying function of space and time. So this is what I call slow h space-time. And here, it is just the same kind of thing, but h now becomes a function of eta and x. So, for example, you can have ds squared equal a squared of x eta theta squared plus dx squared. You can write a more general form with some smooth magic in 3D. And a of x eta is 1 over h of x eta. Okay, if h is a slowly varying function in the sense that grad h is much less than h squared, then I think this form of the wave function will still apply. And I can go follow the same argument and find that c is related to eta in this way. So the cutoff surfaces in this kind of space-time will still be the commoving apparent horizon surfaces. Sorry. Thank you. So xi is still equal to eta. So they're still commoving apparent horizon surfaces. All right. So now the question is, if we choose these different conformal gauges, different transformations f of x, does the measure change? And
In fact, it turns out that we do have to do some gauge fixing. I think I don't need this anymore. Maybe. Oh, yeah.
From the point of view that I described before, if you made conformal biotransformations which depended on the type of bubble that you were in, that would change the answer because it would change this quantity that I called Q. Is that the same issue that you're dealing with?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So this is exactly what I was going to say. That you can think of two things that you can do. One is you make this wild transformation of the metric, of the boundary metric, and if f is some smooth function, then it doesn't change anything. Because basically, when your cutoff xi becomes smaller than the characteristic scale of variation of f, then you can concentrate on a small piece of your multiverse corresponding to that scale. And then this rescaling corresponds to just a constant rescale. And constant rescaling just shifts you in time. And according to this, shift in time doesn't do anything, because in the limit, you have a limit, right? And it doesn't depend on anything, on your choice of sigma or anything. So all these little pieces, if you break your initial surface in little pieces and follow the evolution, each little piece will give you the same answer. So if you choose this f to be a smooth function, it doesn't... the result is invariant under these transformations. However, if you say that let us make f correlated with the type of vacuum you're in, right? So over here, you look which kind of bubble, this corresponds to different vacuum, look at which kind of bubble it is, and your function f will depend on that, right? So let's call this, say, phi bar A. Suppose these are the Higgses that determine the type of vacuum. If your function f depends on phi a, then your answer changes. All right, so we have to choose the gauge then. And the proposal that I make is the following. The idea is that we want to sample different vacua unbiasedly. So we want to impose a gauge condition on the boundary that will fix the conformal gauge. And I say, this condition should only include the metric. It should be independent of any meta fields on the boundary.
Sorry, what is it?
Capital F is some function. This is the gauge fixing function, right? We impose this condition. Independent of phi A. After that, you can make transformations with smooth functions. Now, of course, there is nothing to tell us what this function f is, although it is somewhat restricted, as if I have time, I'll tell you. But the claim or the hope is that the result is independent of what function it is. Now, since the function has to be generally covariant, it must depend, it can depend on curvature, right? On scalar curvature, on derivatives of these things. And the spatial 3D transformations. Yeah. Then, okay, maybe let me tell it right now. I think the constraint possible on this function is the following. You could form invariants of this form. But the scalar curvature will generally have delta function singularities on the bubble walls. You don't want to square delta functions. Now, by a conformal rescaling, you can remove delta function in any one component of Rij that you wish. But you cannot remove them in all of them. The conclusion is that F should depend only on scalar curvature. In scalar curvature, it being one component, you can remove delta functions. So the simplest form of this boundary gauge fixing condition is to choose R equal to 0. Or you can choose R equal to constant, and these have been discussed. But I think since this introduces no correlations with the type of vacua, well, anyway, this fixes the boundary metric. This requirement that it doesn't depend on phi A should be, can be interpreted in the sense that it is an unbiased sampling of different bubbles. And going from one such function to another corresponds to doing a while rescaling, which is independent, which is uncorrelated with boundary fields. So I think it shouldn't change the probabilities. Do I have a few more minutes? So this is okay. So the only thing that I want to mention also is that this is basically all I have to say about the matters of principle. Then as a matter of practice, so what do we do when we want to calculate the probabilities in some multiverse model? This analysis that I described to you tells us what these surfaces, cutoff surfaces, are in the slow H regions of spacetime. They are commoving apparent, surfaces of constant commoving apparent horizon. But what do we do in the rest of spacetime? So what I tried to do is to introduce a model measure which will have this property in slow H regions and have some simple prescription elsewhere. The simplest thing you could try is to say, okay, can we use the CAH surfaces everywhere? Well, apparent horizon is A dot over A, right? And Xi is 1 over HA is 1 over A dot. So if you want to know how relation between Xi and the time cutoff, you take Xi dot. This is minus A double dot over A dot squared. So you see that if A double dot is monotonic, it has the same sign. Like in inflating regions, A double dot is positive. Then, as you decrease Xi, T grows, as it should. So in inflating regions, everything works all right. But if you try to extend your surface, your cutoff surface, so this is inflating region, this is end of inflation inside the bubble. So your surface goes something like this, but then when it cuts to the, comes to the end of inflation, something else happens, and actually you can show that this surface does something strange, turns around. So, okay, so how can we fix that? I make the simple proposal that basically what we know, if indeed this is the relation we are going to use, these surfaces sigma have to be space-like. Because the wave function of the universe is defined on space-like surfaces, because this should be non-commuting variables. That is, commuting variables, I'm sorry. And also, if you have a surface which is time-like somewhere, you get strange things. But you have a surface which is time-like, you can have an event here and its cause here. So you have events without causes and so forth. So having space-like surfaces is a good thing. So what I suggest is that given our surface here, we exclude not only the region above the surface, but also the future of any point on the surface. So basically what happens is that you have a light cone emanating from here, and the surface is, the cutoff surface will be this, and then it will be continued by a null surface. If you like a space-like surface, you can get a space-like surface by infinitesimal deformation. So this is what is called CIH plus measure, where plus corresponds to this extra condition. This metric, we actually, with Mike Salem, we looked at the phenomenological properties of this metric, and it works very well. It gives the factor very similar to what Lenny likes. So the prediction for the cosmological constant is fine, and also it gives an interesting prediction for the number of e-folds of inflation, so we can, there is a non-negligible probability for us to observe a negative curvature.
Question. I'm a bit confused of one thing. It looks to me like the ambiguity that you have in choosing your gauge fixing sounds like the same ambiguity that I was speaking of when I spoke about the thing Q, the thing that you might conserve to find how the cutoff surface moves. I think that's right, but in my view, that changes the answer. You say. At the level of the prefactor, it changes the answer. Now, maybe I'm wrong in saying the ambiguity is the same.
Well, let me tell you one thing. If you take the simple model where of the multiverse, where you have just this DS and ADS bubbles separated by thin walls, mm-hmm. right? And look at this screen at the future boundary. So this space-time, you can foliate the flat surfaces. So your boundary metric can be chosen flat. You can remove all delta functions and divide and everything. So here, the boundary metric doesn't know anything about what kind of vacuum, what information content of your vacuum, right? And then the remaining freedom of gauge rescalings is just you have overall conformal smooth change of metric. So I don't think, so this condition, if I impose, say, the condition R bar equal to zero, this will select the flat metric on the boundary. If I impose any condition which is a function only of...
If you make a field-dependent vial transformation, field-dependent means it depends on the type of vacuum that you're in.
Okay.
But that's a gauge condition that doesn't just depend on G bar.
Right.
So you decided to do G bar in the... I think there was some statement that you're using the Einstein frame in the ball.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
If you
decided to change that, you would change the answer.
Einstein frame is the right frame.
No, I don't think so. No, that's unclear, actually.
Well, they had a lot of debates with Jelmer about these frames, but now I'm vague on this, so I better not comment on it. I think we concluded that Einstein frame is the right frame to use, but...
have you? No, the reason I don't think that's necessarily true is Einstein frame is the right frame when you're talking about information and area. I think you're talking about volume. And
where do I talk about volume?
Well, why the Einstein frame?
I'll get back to you later. I don't know. I may get back to you.
That's good.
So your whole setup seems to be aimed at least keeping track of information, or at least it's a holographic description of the surface space.
Yes.
But how does time evolution? Is there a picture of time evolution in this
right.
framework?
Yeah.
Or not?
The time evolution is that you have this boundary, which is a future infinity. When you introduce a cutoff, that gives you a surface in space-time, right? At least in semi-classical picture. So basically, time evolution, when you change the cutoff, you change the surface sigma.
But then you get this picture of integrating in degrees of freedom, which makes me nervous as a theory of time evolution.
Well, you can integrate them out, if you like that better. You start at infinity, where everything has been said and done, and then you increase your cutoff surface, right. You integrate out degrees of freedom, and you discover what your universe looked like at earlier times.
I think what Herman is saying is he doesn't like the idea of changing the number of degrees of freedom.
First of all, how do you reconcile this with how we think about quantum mechanics? Also, indeed, in randomization group, integrating in degrees of freedom is highly unstable.
Let's integrate them out. It is unstable in the sense that it should be unstable because the universe can have many possible future histories. And it is really an unstable situation. So I think this is good.
But I guess at the deeper level, how do you reconcile this with all kinds of notions?
Well, obviously, you cannot describe this by a unitary operator, this kind of...
But doesn't that sort of make clear that this is wrong?
Sorry?
No. Doesn't that make clear that this is the wrong paradigm? Because somehow, if you say that you cannot predict the future, that's basically what you're saying, because you have less information when you start, and you need every time more information to see what the future looks like. That really means that this is a breakdown of many laws of physics, but I think this is making clear that this as a framework is totally imperfect in the sense that you don't even keep track of information.
Are you prepared to say then that any kind of GS-CFD is the wrong framework altogether?
For
the same reason?
For calculating certain... I haven't seen a well-formed sort of formulation of it, which also makes me happy. But if this is a property that you integrate in degrees of freedom, I think that's something really wrong with the whole framework.
Well, it could be, but I think...
It's another tension.
You have to decide what questions you ask, because obviously here we are talking about this big multiverse, most of which we are not going to see. As Lenny said, there are tensions.
Isn't there a sense in which all times at once are present in your cutoff surface because you have sort of different... If I cut through a system, all possible states of the system in different times are still going to be present in this one surface in different parts of the wave function.
Well, let's see. I think if you look at a particular time, a particular cutoff surface, then you have each cutoff region is represented by these NB fields, right? And super horizon nodes are represented in a more straightforward way. But then if you go to a later time, you have more degrees of freedom.
Isn't the later time the same as just a rescaled version of the original, spatially rescaled version of the original time? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that. My picture is, maybe somebody can explain the following thing to me. We have, here is a time, a surface of the multiverse in the universe. Mm-hmm. We take horizon size regions. Each of them has sth degrees of freedom, if we believe in holography, right? Bigger regions, don't know, right? We go to later times, we have more horizon regions, right? If we add up these degrees of freedom, if they're independent, in this picture that I am advocating, they are independent, because these are different cutoff regions of the field theory, right? These are independent degrees of freedom. So if you go to a later time, we are increasing the number of degrees of freedom. If this is not what is happening, then there should be some strong correlations between the degrees of freedom in different horizon regions. So maybe this is the story, but that's a different philosophy.
Okay, well, let's thank Alex again. Coffee break downstairs now. Let's try and come back at about 10 after 11.